Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Our show has always been positioned as smart. You agree with that, Chris? I mean, we're a show where you discuss sports issues, you talk about things, you make important points, and you know what you're talking about, right?
I mean, wasn't the opening line when it was, you know, even started back with you and Murph, these guys know sports? Yeah, it was always about knowledge.
Well, today, that line could be used for the gentleman across the glass. If you'd have tuned on to this show on Thursday, you would have known Brooks Koepka was going to win the U.S. Open. Fish, you had him called. You made him as your first pick in your fantasy draft against noted golf experts JP and Mike Prater. To the point, my co-host here, Chris Lewis, disparaged the pick.
So this is during Thursday after Koepka's first round. He's in second place already, Chris.
Okay.
And then you make this comment.
Uh-oh. I just feel like if Brooks Koepka is your first round pick, you're not going to win this thing. Yeah. Whoops.
Chris, here is a compilation of all the golfers you suggested I pick instead of Brooks Koepka.
Okay. I just feel like, you know, between more known golfers like, you know, Spieth, Dustin Johnson, how about, like, you know, even Sergio Garcia, Rory, Bubba Watson.
Now, four of those guys missed the cut, by the way. Spieth ended up finishing one over par. Sergio was three under par. Nowhere close. Ooh. Two Brooks Koepka.
And I was keeping quiet, but I was right with you, Chris. I who's this guy? Who's this guy going to win? So kudos to you, Mike Fisher, on coming up with Brooks Koepka. I'd never heard of him. If you told me he was a hockey player, I would have believed you.
You were much smarter than me. I heard a lot of people talk up Bubba Watson, who was still on the board when you selected.
Yes.
And I did not know the background, the profile, but Brooks Koepka, but you were telling me you saw him on a list, you liked what you saw.
He's a good driver, which he proved at the U.S. Open, 377-yard drive on the 18th, by the way. Could you do that, Chris Lewis?
No, I think he was kind of fired up. He was probably, you know, pretty excited about him closing in on winning the U.S. Open, I have to give you credit. How much did you get for doing this?
$150.
Yeah.
$20 entry fee. I came back down 7 strokes going into Sunday. Came back and won thanks to Koepka. Got $20 for him winning, $130 for first place. So a nice $150. And, Chris, he's still disrespected. British Open's odds already out. He's only the 7th best.
Oh, okay. So you can get him again.
I can get him again. late round pick.
But the last 7 majors have all been won by first time winners.
I know. I made
so
the
if that
my
comes,
strategy.
If that comes, you might want to look for some other first timer.
Now, fantasy golf, something I've never done. I'm in the fantasy football, in the fantasy baseball league. How did being in a fantasy golf affect the amount that you watch the U.S. Open?
They made it 100 times better. Because I actually had a reason to watch as opposed to, all right, I'm going to watch the final pairing. All right, I know who won. So I can talk about it. No, I turned it on at the very start to watch Kevin Na, who was even par going into Sunday, tee off. So because he was on my fantasy golf team. And I like to do this. Is everyone complains, Chris Lewis, maybe you've heard this. Fantasy football is ruining the sport of football because people don't cheer for teams.
Yeah.
You cheer for players. Well, that's perfect in an individual sport because I had 6 guys to cheer for.
Yeah.
And towards the end, I had Bill Haas. He ended up finishing 5th. They didn't even show him because he was nowhere close. So I'm sitting there, where's Bill Haas? What's Bill Haas doing? I had to go to the USOpen.com. Oh, Bill Haas, I'm watching him on my other screen over here. It was great. I loved every minute of it. Best way to ever play and watch golf, I think.
You're lucky that Tiger Woods isn't golfing anymore because he used to monopolize the coverage to where, like, you'd see every stroke of Tiger Woods even if he isn't in contention. And like, wait a minute, I have these guys on my fantasy team. You can go ahead and show them every once in a while. But I'll admit when I'm wrong. I go out there and say some crazy things sometimes, and I will accept the accountability of being completely wrong on this, just like a lot of these process haters for the Sixers, process haters, people who thought Sam Hinkie didn't know what was going on, they're getting exposed today a little bit. So, I'm willing to be accountable and say, like, when I make an opinion that's wrong, it's wrong. Fish was right, I was wrong. And it sounds like a lot of people who are wrong about the process and Sam Hinkie, it's time for them to do the same.
Now, the process didn't include you having no cell service.
Yeah.
You went camping. And the first thing I hear from Chris when he comes back from camping yesterday late was, I missed everything as far as the information, the chats, whatever, on the Sixers deal official. Although we knew when we were on for the monstrosity of 5 hours on Friday that the deal was probably going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you missed all of the back and forth of it actually happening.
Yeah, it's strange how, you know, addicted, I guess, you become to the cell phone is probably the best way to put it, or just having access to information, and how just off-putting it is when you don't have access to information, which involves, you know, everybody out there has a favorite team. If you're listening to the show, you're a sports fan. If you're a sports fan, you probably have a favorite team. The Sixers and the Phillies are my two childhood teams, so I've been a fan of those two teams longer than I've been a fan of any team. Not really an Eagles fan, and don't have the same kind of, you know, appeal to hockey. But the Sixers and Phillies, you know, I go back, a while back. And since, what, 2002, 2003, the Sixers have not been exactly a relevant basketball team. They've either been an average team that's a 6, 7, or 8 team in the Eastern Conference, or they've been pretty bad and getting early draft picks. So this was, Trey was actually one of the few times where the 76ers had something that was in the national sports scene. And for me to not have access to the information, because with a trade, first you hear that, okay, maybe it's agreed upon. Then you're getting, okay, maybe it involved this part. Maybe it involved this piece. Maybe it involved this pick. Maybe it involved that pick. So it comes out little by little, but I know things are developing and information is getting out there, but I'm in the middle of the woods. I have no idea how to track this. And like, I just realized maybe your generation, because, you know, newspapers, you go back to, like, you don't know what the news of the previous day was until you get the paper the next morning. Me and Fish are from a different era. It's like we're so used to knowing if something's going on, we can find out about it. We know about it, especially if we want to know about it. There's a lot of different ways we can find out about it. To be in a position for basically, you know, 20 and 24 hours of just being at the mercy of, oh my gosh, I hope when I turn on my phone and I get cell phone service that things have worked out. I can't really know when's the last time I felt something
See,
like that.
For me, that wouldn't be a problem. If I knew I was going to be gone for 24 hours, I would have made the decision to be gone and make the best of it, and I get when I came back. And I think you're right. I think it is generational. But now I want to know, you're out there with family, friends.
Yeah.
And how good were you as a camping compatriot of these people?
Were
you surly? Were you not entering into whatever they wanted you to do?
I probably wasn't there. I was there, but my mind wasn't there, because you're always thinking, okay, like, what am I missing? Is there a way that I could go check my phone? Is there a one spot in the middle of the woods that might have a bar of cell phone service so I can try to find a way for me to get the latest information on how this was going down? It was me being there, but not really being there. I hope I wasn't at least that offensive to the other people who were there with me. But, you know, it does kind of affect your mentality. And I don't know, you know, again, how many times you'll be in a position to where you can't find out something that you really want to know. But you can DVR a game, for example, a Giants game, and watch it 2 hours later and be just as interested. I don't know if I can do that. Like, if
I definitely can do that. And I don't go on Twitter during Giants games for the very reason that when I'm watching it online, the game is usually about a minute behind. I don't want to know that they've either won or lost the game, which I would see on Twitter before I'd see it come up on the game. It's like going to a movie. I'll go to a movie, and I don't want to know what happened, you know, how the Pirates of the Caribbean movie played out. That's the last movie I went to a couple weeks ago. I can sit there all day and try to block myself out, and I'm very good at making sure that I don't see things.
But that's, I guess, the difference to me between something that's scripted and unscripted. Like, sports is unscripted, and that's the, you know, at least it's supposed to be. And that's one of the greatest appeals of sports. So, you know, the fact that it's unscripted drama and we're reacting to it as it unfolds, like, I think that's one of the appeals to it, which is why it doesn't work as something that you can DVR typically. You're special, I think, in that fact. I think more people would be on at least the side of, you know, I got to watch it with everybody else, because I can't be the one. You know, my mom used to have a saying, like, how come I'm the last to know? And she'd be upset with that. Like, I would be upset if I'm the last one to know. I can't handle it.
But you see, I don't care about seeing what other people tweet out and say about the game. I want to be able to watch the game unspoiled, unbothered by the fact of somebody spoiling it for me.
Different approaches, and I think it does start with your era of, you know, you got the newspaper in the morning. You didn't know anything until the next morning when you read the newspaper. I mean, if I go 2 hours without checking my phone to figure out what's happening, that was a long time I went without checking my phone.
All right, here's your chance. You're going to need a phone to win this. You'll have to call in. You can win a pair of tickets to tomorrow night's Hawks opener against Eugene. Seats are on the third baseline. That's huge. You're not looking into the sun. You'll also get a free Smokey the Bear baseball as well. Be the ninth caller right now to the ticket at 424-9300. That's 424-9300. And then we'll give you a couple of more chances on this show. Two chances every hour to win a pair of tickets to the opener, all courtesy of Sports Radio 93.1 FM, 1350 AM. The ticket. Get ready, set, go. Ninth caller goes to the opener for the Hawks at home tomorrow night. Coming up, we'll find out about that Sixers-Celtics trade. Why did each side want to do it? Sam Vecenie of the Sporting News joins us next on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. Congratulations to Zach Felton. He is the first of our four winners today for a pair of tickets to the Hawks opener tomorrow night. By the way, tomorrow at 2:15, we'll be speaking with a very well-known member of the Eugene Emeralds that will be playing the Hawks. That being one Joe Martorano playing third base for them. He'll join us tomorrow at 2:15. Find out how he's doing in his first full season in baseball. But again, Zach Felton, the winner of a pair of tickets. Stay tuned in the next half hour or so. We will be giving away a couple of more tickets to the Hawks game tomorrow night.
And, you know, speaking of Boise and pros, now this NBA draft might not have any, you know, Boise State prospects expected to be taken, although the next draft with Chandler Hutchison, Chandler declared for this one, he decided to decline it and come back for another season at Boise State. We'll get to Chandler Hutchison and perhaps his draft stock with Sam Vecenie of the Sporting News, but he joins us now to talk about the NBA draft. Sam, we appreciate the time. First of all, the Sixers, my squad, made a trade with the Boston Celtics to acquire the number one pick in the draft. Celtics get the third pick and a future first rounder. With everything that's shifted, what are you thinking about that trade?
So yeah, what this trade comes down to is essentially Danny Ainge has a different evaluation of Markelle Fultz than what I think most do throughout the industry, throughout the NBA, as compared to the other prospects in the draft. I think that he believes there is very little difference, at least 1 through 3 on his NBA draft board. Otherwise, you can't feel comfortable making this move. If you believe that there is a true number one talent in this draft, you really need to take him at number one, given the, you know, normal prospect difference and normal expected value of the number one pick versus the number three pick. So I think this is Danny Ainge just, you know, believing in his heart of hearts that, you know, Markelle Fultz isn't the guy that's going to get them over the top. So why not pick up another lottery ticket down the road that's going to be, in all likelihood, quite a good lottery ticket.
So that's understanding it from Boston side of things. From the Sixers side, I mean, as a fan, why should I be hyped about this move? Why is Markelle Fultz, a guy on a team that had only 9 wins in college basketball, why is all this hype around him?
Yeah, I mean, he was the first player in a quarter century to put up 23-5-5, and, you know, that he did it as a freshman that was actually underaged for being a freshman. I know that his team won 9 games. I would not be super concerned about that. He won games at DeMatha Catholic in Washington, D.C. He won games for Team USA. To me, this is just the obvious pick. He can do every single thing on the basketball floor that an NBA team asks from their lead guard. He can get into the lane. He can score at all 3 levels. He's a really underrated passer, really good decision maker. Everything that you want from a point guard, he's going to be able to provide. And the biggest thing about all of it is that I thought the biggest problem with Philadelphia going forward would be trying to find a way to build a roster around Ben Simmons. I thought that they were going to have difficulty doing that, just given his player type, right? He's 6'10", doesn't really shoot it all that well, doesn't protect the rim, needs to have the ball in his hands a lot to be effective. With Markelle Fultz, you have a guy who can play on and off the ball, who can really score the basketball quite a bit, and who can mesh really well with Ben Simmons, because I think Simmons is going to be able to run the point, lead the break in transition, and then he's going to be able to also run some 1-4 screen and rolls with Simmons, or with Fultz in the half court, where he's not necessarily as capable as a point guard is. So even though the Sixers want to try a point guard situation with him, he's now fully insulated from, you know, all of the difficulties that a true point guard has. So, you know, this is a perfect fit for Philadelphia. I think that, you know, this is a home run for them, even though they're giving up another pick of excellent value with either that Lakers pick or the 2019 Kings pick.
NBA draft coming up Thursday night. Sam Vecenie of Sporting News joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris on Sports Radio The Ticket. All right, Sam, I've got to ask a question that the moment I saw this trade even being talked about, that threw a red flag up for me. Why would Boston want to trade with someone in their division, especially when you make it sound like this pick is a glove fit for the 76ers? I think Boston should be very careful about giving somebody to somebody in their division they're going to see a lot over the next, say, 10 years.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. This is a really interesting decision for them on a lot of levels, right? Like, not only is it basically Danny Ainge kind of putting his legacy on the line a little bit almost. Like, to me, Danny is probably one of the, like, five or six best general managers in all of the NBA. And you look at his trade path, he tends to get the best out of his trade history. But if you look at his draft history, it really hasn't been all that strong. He tends to go outside of the box, and those outside-of-the-box picks often have not worked out for him. So this is him just making a full-on decision. I am going to trust my evaluation methods that have not necessarily been all that excellent in the past and go for it. And in doing that, he is setting up a division rival and a conference rival with a pick that fits perfectly with the rest of their roster that gives them three potential superstars in Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, and Markelle Fultz. That part of it is very puzzling to me. If I was the Celtics, I probably would have been trying to trade with Phoenix or trying to trade with the Lakers even, who were rumored to be interested in trying to trade up for number one.
All right, Sam, so now we see the Celtics getting what they got from Philadelphia. Do we expect another trade? You say the draft market hasn't been that kind to Danny Ainge. Is he maybe going to look to flip this for a veteran?
I think that they're certainly going to listen to offers. Danny will always listen to offers in that front office. He's going to be, ear to the ground the rest of the way. And if something comes up, something comes up. One interesting aspect of this NBA draft is that it's 8 days before free agency. And that, I think, makes it really complicated to do trades before free agency. You know, the Celtics have right around $30 million in cap space if they renounce all their cap holds, and they can create $30 million in cap space. That's like just slightly below what Gordon Hayward's max is going to be. So the way that I've kind of been attacking this from the Celtics' perspective is that, like, if they can go out and get Gordon Hayward, then they should push in and try and get Jimmy Butler. But if they can't go out and get Gordon Hayward, in my opinion, they should be trying to be the next team after the Cleveland Cavaliers, right? Mm-hmm. They should be trying to hit that window in 2019 and 2020 and 2021 rather than trying to hit it this year, which is what a trade for a Jimmy Butler or a Paul George would essentially be pigeonholing them into. But if they get Gordon Hayward and can set things up for both the short term and the long term, I think it makes a lot of sense for them to try and go out and trade some of these massive cavalcade of assets, so to speak, and go out and get a Jimmy Butler, set up a team with, you know, Isaiah Thomas, Butler, Hayward, Horford, Jaylen Brown, and whoever else they don't trade for Jimmy Butler or Paul George.
Sam Vecenie, Sporting News. He hosts a podcast, Game Theory Podcast, which has done an excellent job of profiling the draft from all these different angles. He's joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk. Now, you've mentioned a couple of the vet names, whether it's Paul George, Jimmy Butler, Kevin Love. These are all names that have been thrown out there this weekend of, you know, guys who could be, you know, team changers if they're on the move. Can you kind of rank those three in terms of attractiveness of the asset? Because, you know, Paul George, for example, put his trade value in an interesting spot by making this move with the Pacers, going to management and saying, 1 year, I'm out and going to the Lakers.
Yeah, so did you say Gordon Hayward is the third one?
Or that group? Yeah, well, Jimmy Butler, Paul George, Kevin Love were the ones who true free agents, but Gordon Hayward, I guess, also fits, too.
Right, so, I mean, Gordon Hayward would be number one for me just because you don't have to give up extra assets for him. Number two on this list would be Jimmy Butler. To me, he's a top 15 player in the NBA that has two more years on his contract at an exceptionally reasonable rate. Number three, I would probably say Paul George over Kevin Love. I think Kevin Love is still like a top 30 player in the NBA or so. But the injury history with Kevin Love would worry me, and I wouldn't want to lock myself in to two, potentially three more years of Kevin Love if things broke right. And then I would say Kevin Love at number four, obviously. And we can talk about Paul George now. Paul George, in my opinion, didn't really do anything yesterday that hindered his stock around the NBA. It might have, you know, made people publicly aware of it, but this is something that's been simmering behind the scenes for a while. Teams have been unwilling to give up a crazy amount of assets for Paul George, in the knowledge that, you know, he hasn't exactly made it a secret around the league that he is going to be looking to go to Los Angeles next offseason and play with the Lakers, or maybe, as my colleague at the Sporting News reported, maybe the Clippers as well, the team that he actually grew up rooting for. I think that Paul George and the Pacers are in a really tough spot here. I think it's actually a good thing that he went to them and said, you know, officially, you should try and trade me, or you should try and make plans without me going forward. I think it's actually going to help them.
Sam, as we finish things up, let's bring it back locally to Boise. Chandler Hutchison tested the waters and then pulled back. Good decision. Would he have gone in this draft this week? And then with the Sixers doing things, does that make things more difficult for James Webb III?
Yeah, Chandler Hutchison is one of my favorite, like, under-the-radar prospects, and he has been for a couple years. Like, even last year when he was averaging, like, 7 or 8 points a game, I remember going out to the Wooden Classic out here in Anaheim. I live in Los Angeles. And I was impressed with the size, the length. He was 6'7". He was rangy. He was pretty athletic. I thought he was just kind of a jump shot away from being a capable NBA draft prospect, and he really helped himself there this year, in my opinion. He became a much better jump shooter, even though he's still not taking the volume that you're looking for as a potential athletic 6'7" wing player in the NBA. If he can get up to, like, you know, 5-6 three-pointers a game, continue to really iron out that jump shot, it's really going to help him, because, you know, he can rebound the basketball. He's a really underrated passer, in my opinion. You know, 6'7", this guy is, you know, the perfect archetype for what NBA teams are looking for. He just needs to continue to get to where he needs to go in terms of skill set. If he was in this draft like he declared for, I think he probably would have gotten looks in the second half of the second round, but he's always going to get looks in that range. I think it behooves him to return and try and up his stock by having, you know, potentially a 20-point season where he, you know, takes 5 three-pointers a game and shoots 30% or 35% on those 5 three-pointers a game like he did this year. So I'm a pretty big fan of his going forward, and I think he could really help himself next year.
And then anything on James Webb and what you've heard about him or his development with the Sixers D-League team and his potential path?
I've always been a little bit less sold on James Webb, to be honest. You know, he's like kind of a – people thought of him as a potential, like, you know, three, like, wing type of guy. But he doesn't really have that, you know, lateral athleticism, and doesn't really have the game in terms of, you know, handling the ball and playing on the perimeter to play the three. So you're talking about basically a stretch four at that stage. I don't know that he has enough, like, playmaking ability and ball handling ability to really make an NBA impact. He's going to make a lot of money playing basketball over the course of his career, be it in the D-League, be it overseas, be it wherever he wants to go. There's a market for his skill set. He can knock down shots. He can, you know, be athletic and block shots and do some things. I'm not sure it's going to be the NBA for James Webb, though. Maybe he can. Maybe he can improve. But, you know, I'm not quite sure I'm there on him yet.
Sam Vecenie, Sporting News, Game 3 Podcast. We appreciate the time. Good luck leading into the draft.
Anytime, guys.
On Friday, if you're heading west down State Street between 3 and 6, get some takeout and a cold beer with Caves and Prater. They'll be at Burger and Brew on State Street. It's near Willow Lane. Again, it's Friday, a live edition of Idaho Sports Talk from 3 to 6 with Caves and Prater. When we come back, a little more on the U.S. Open. What was Joe Buck's biggest mistake and why I don't think it was the worst thing on the Fox broadcast? That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
The Ticket Sports Update.
And we'll start the Ticket Sports Update with the U.S. Open as I am champion and Chris Lewis gets to eat. Is it crow? You eating some crow today, Chris Lewis?
Yeah, crow. Got egg on my face.
Yeah, you made fun of my Brooks Koepka pick as my first pick in the fantasy golf draft with JP and Prater. And look what happened. He won. But Chris, that wasn't the most embarrassing that happened this weekend involving Brooks Koepka. And Bob is a play-by-play announcer. I'm sure Joe Buck after the 18th hole was stuff of nightmares for you, right?
Well, it would be, but you also, I think, you understand how it happened, and that's when Brooks Koepka wins and gets embraced after coming off the 18th green, and Joe Buck acknowledges that it's his girlfriend, gives a name, gives a background story. Well, all that could have been found on Wikipedia, but it's not the current girlfriend. The old girlfriend was a professional soccer player. The new one's a model. And then later on in the postgame show, he had to correct himself, probably because somebody said, that's not Becky, whatever the name was.
Becky with the good hair.
Yeah, you know, and it's somebody else. So, yeah, that's not a good look. And, of course, for ears to come, they'll show the embrace. And if you kept the audio up, it would be Joe Buck saying it was somebody else and not you.
That's not good. You're a play-by-play announcer. Do you have a mistake that reaches that level?
No. Thank goodness.
The stakes, I don't know if you've called anything as, you know, prestigious as the U.S. Open on Fox, but even in your own, you know, wherever you've been, you've never had that level?
Not that level where you're misidentified. I've misidentified somebody for a touchdown before, but not to the point where you've got two people on the screen and one of them is somebody you're claiming is another girl. That's not good. But I didn't think that was the worst thing on the post game last night.
Oh, what was?
I thought the staging of the award ceremony was amateur hour. I thought Fox was terrible. They had Curtis Strange out there to interview Koepka, and the positioning of where they had him stand put a huge shadow on the face of Koepka. It, to me, looked like they hadn't blocked anything out, didn't account for sun. Curtis Strange had this golf hat on, and the hat was throwing even more shade on the face of Koepka. At one point, they looked like they kind of got through an IFB asking Strange to move, where he kind of moved, the shadow went off. Maybe it was luck of the draw, but I thought that looked like something you'd expect in small market television.
Wow. So what is the bigger shade, the shade that was covering the face or the shade that bobbed through at Fox that just completely ripped that broadcast apart in the way he did? I mean, I know they don't have many golf tournaments, and they haven't been doing the U.S. Open for more than just, a couple of years.
And nothing to do with golf. It was fact.
Production.
That they didn't, no production. They didn't come out like, all right, we're going to do the interview here. Let's see what it looks like. No, it just looked like it was, oh, let's get Curtis Strange out there to interview. Oh, you're standing there? Okay, let's bring the camera here. I thought it was terrible.
You think the old girlfriend was watching?
No.
When the new girlfriend got the hug and then heard her name on it?
I think she saw it later, but I don't think she saw it live.
Okay.
You?
I wouldn't think so. Why would you watch your ex, especially when he's winning? I feel like as soon as he took a 3-stroke lead, you'd turn it off because I don't want to watch
it. You can't be happy for your ex?
I don't know how the breakup went. I mean, so that would be
Wikipedia
one
Wikipedia didn't know about the breakup.
Yeah, so it was just very recent. In case you're curious, his new girlfriend, star of the upcoming movie, Sharknado 5.
Oh,
yes,
really?
There is five of
really?
Them.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, was the original Sharknado like 2 years ago?
I feel like
original Sharknado was one of the biggest turkeys ever, right?
I've never seen it. I've only heard of it.
They've made five of them things?
Well, they've made four. Five's coming out. And that's her other big movie is Attack of the 50-Foot Cheerleader. I don't know if you've heard of that one either.
No, I have not. She is a megastar, apparently, though. I might be in the wrong
Think
circles.
Joe Buck might get a few copies of Sharknado 5?
Misidentified. Don't do it again.
I really feel sorry for Joe because I guarantee you it was on either he got it off Wikipedia or a production assistant and had it on the card. Father's name X, mother's name Y, girlfriend. You know,
I blame his partner because his partner said, "Oh, by the way, that's not Becky. That's Jenna Sims." Koepka told me in private this week that they had come together. Why didn't you help Joe Buck
beforehand? Why didn't you share that information ahead of time?
I feel like that's, you know, hey, Koepka's on a, hey, what's his girlfriend? Do you still have it? No, it's actually, okay. So I don't know what his play-by-play buddy was doing or his color analyst, but.
Maybe he needs a new color analyst.
That's why.
Maybe he needs to call Tony Romo.
Yeah, there you go.
And Pete, you and Abe, before the broadcast, you guys share notes.
We do,
right?
Absolutely.
That's the crucial part of the broadcast. Y'all need to come together and share the notes.
The other big news of the weekend, Boston Celtics did not listen to Bob Beeler this time. Bob, you say never trade within your division. That's exactly what the Celtics did, swapping their third overall pick. And then there's some weird protections. They're going to either give away the King or the Lakers pick next year, unless it's the top one pick, and it becomes a Kings pick in 2019 to the Celtics for the number one overall pick. And Bob, you say never trade within your own division.
Giants-Dodgers, never trade with a rivalry. They've made three trades since coming west. 68, 85, and 7, none of the trades amounting to much. Yankees and Red Sox have made 9 trades amongst each other since that 58 time. Of course, the buying of Babe Ruth was one, again, proving don't swap with a rival. You don't want Markelle Fultz to turn into Babe Ruth for basketball. But how about the Cubs and Cardinals? Since 58, they've made 33 trades, but only 3 since 1980. Cubs learned their lesson in 64 and in 80. They gave the Cardinals Hall of Famers before they were Hall of Famers. Lou Brock and Bruce Sutter.
That'll do it. That'll do it. Warn you. Now, with the Celtics, they just have to think that the 3 is better than the 1 for their team. Whoever they get at 3, whether it's Josh Jackson or Jason Tatum, is better than Markelle Fultz, which would be an anti-opinion based on every draft guy who's been covering the draft, not just for the last 2 months leading into draft season, but the guys who have been in on the ground scouting this class for years. These are the guys who will tell you Markelle Fultz is significantly better of a prospect than Jason Tatum, Josh Jackson, Lonzo Ball, or everybody else you want to put on this list. So as a Celtics, you just have to have different information than a lot of the other guys, or you think that like the timelines are different, or you're going to package it for a veteran in a trade, which I think has to be it. You're focusing in on Jimmy Butler, Anthony Davis, somebody else down the line, because any other way, you're trading for the future in a way, like a pick down the line, which is also part of the same timeline that the Sixers are building for, which is for 2 to 3 to 4 years down the line when Embiid and Simmons and Fultz all become in their prime and they think they can build around that trio.
But I think it's got to be hard to trade for a pick you don't know where it is. You don't know, is it going to be an early pick that's worth something?
Yeah.
I mean, if all the teams either do poorly in the lottery or end up being fairly decent, that pick may not even sniff the number three pick.
Yeah, they're banking on the Kings still being bad in 2019.
Probably true.
That's probably true. So you got to play the odds in that category, and you see that perspective from Danny Ainge. But, yeah, I just don't see when everybody else who does this for, again, 2 to 3 years studying this class, they say there is a gap between 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. And you say, no, there isn't a gap. You have to be right on this decision. You better be, or else you're going to be the guy who, not to be this extreme, but the guy who drafted, Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan. It's not, I don't know if it's going to be that level, but you had the number one pick and traded it for somebody who has a lot more question marks than Markelle Fultz.
And then you look at all of the drafts and everything that's out there. I think the Celtics, they're close to the Cavaliers. You're in charge of the team now, although I don't think Danny Ainge is in that much jeopardy of getting let go. I think you got to make moves to get yourself past the Cavaliers, and that's why I think the picks are going to end up being veterans.
So if you go for it now, that's when it makes a little bit more sense. So you're trading with the Sixers on a different timeline. You're trading for your rival, I get it, but you're making your rival not necessarily significantly better now, a championship contender now. The Sixers aren't that. But, and you're making yourself a championship contender now. But when you trade for a future draft pick, it's like you're trading for down the line when you assume the Sixers will be good down the line because you just gave them a piece that they needed to. So it's a fascinating trade.
All right. Boise Hawks season opens at home. They've opened on the road, but they'll open at home tomorrow night. Your chance to win a pair of tickets, which are on the third baseline, which is not looking into the sun. They're playing the Eugene Emeralds tomorrow night. You get a free Smokey the Bear baseball as well. Be the ninth caller right now at 424-9300. That's 424-9300. Stay listening. We got a couple of more chances on our show, plus quite a few more chances with Caves and Prater as well. We're going to give away two chances every hour until 6 on Sports Radio, 93.1 FM, 1350 AM, The Ticket. Time now for Quick Hits, where Chris and I tackle four topics in rapid-fire fashion. Let's go!
Topic number one.
All right, Chris, what NFL team might be really good next season?
I think it's the Tennessee Titans. I'm liking how their roster is coming together. They signed over the weekend Eric Decker on a one-year deal. So Eric Decker is 30 years old, maybe not the fastest receiver, but he never relied on speed anyway. He's 6'3", a big target to go along with Marcus Mariota. So the biggest problem with Tennessee going into our last season was the lack of depth in the receiving corps. Now they have Eric Decker. They drafted Corey Davis out of Western Michigan. I don't know what they'll do behind those two, but that's a good starting point. Delanie Walker has been one of the most productive tight ends in football the last three seasons. You still have that 1-2 punch at running back in DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry, who we didn't see that much of last year, but Derrick Henry is still somebody who a lot of people were high on going into last draft. Offensive line that's well-regarded is one of the five best in football. An offensive line-heavy coaching staff, including a head coach that used to be an offensive line coach. And a defense that isn't bad. It might not be great, but it isn't bad. And there's a lot of positive checks for Tennessee in a weak division. Where Houston won it last year. Indianapolis and Andrew Luck still isn't ready to go and might not be ready by the start of training camp. Jacksonville is still Jacksonville. Like, I'm really liking Tennessee. I'm bullish on them.
I will concur, and you got to the last point, which I think maybe should have been the lead. It's a bad division.
Yeah.
If Houston is your top choice coming back, and they've changed quarterbacks, who knows what they're going to do on the offensive side of the ball. I agree with you. I think Tennessee, they would be my pick to win the division this year. I think Mariota's getting better, and I agree. I'll concur. I think you've got more knowledge in this than you did in the U.S. Open.
Topic number two.
Yes, I know football a little bit more than golf. What happened yesterday that just summed up the baseball season for you and why it might be bad news for the Rockies?
Watched all four of the Giants-Rockies game. The only thing I could say this weekend is I did not waste my money going down to Denver. Giants led 2-0 yesterday, gave up back-to-back home runs. We're down 3-2. You figure, okay, that's the way the season's gone for the Giants. They're going to get swept by the Rockies in a four-game series. Then all of a sudden they get a pinch-hit home run from Hunter Pence. They're ahead 5-3 going to the bottom of the ninth. They can't blow another save, can they? Yes, they do. Nolan Arenado wins it on a walk-off home run to complete the cycle. Unbelievable. Now I say, why might this not be great for the Rockies? The Rockies are first place by a game over the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks, 46-26. But they're 10-1 against the Giants, which means that against the rest of the league, they're only 9 games over .500. Rocky fans, you will know after this week what kind of team they have, in my opinion. Have Arizona for 3 starting tomorrow night, and then you go to Los Angeles for 3 more over the weekend.
Well, Arizona is ice cold after their series against the Phillies. They won every game in that series against the Phillies. Whoops. Yeah, that was bad. How you give somebody a walk-off home run for the cycle? I mean, just started laughing when I saw the highlight because I know it's on Father's Day,
too. I saw it coming. It was that train coming down the tracks, and you could see that light getting stronger and stronger.
It's on Father's Day, too, and I know you don't have any kids, but you have a couple of dogs, so I know like Father's Day is still kind of important to you because you're a doggy dad. And, you know, for the Giants to let you down on Father's Day like that, that was pretty disappointing.
Topic number three.
What do you make of the last 7 major golf tournaments?
That super teams are really good for your sport. Now, I know we've been having the super team discussion more on the NBA topic, but the last 7 of the major golf tournaments have been won by a first-time major winner, which I guess is great for the parity of it, but you saw the ratings for the last U.S. Open. It wasn't great. The Masters ratings weren't spectacular for it being a Masters. You need the super teams in golf. Where you at, Rory? Where you at, Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson? Like, you got to be in constant contention. The best in the sport have to be there at the end and have to break through and win some of these to really bring on the casual fan, which is why I don't understand the complaint about super teams as if the NBA has really been anything but a couple of dominant teams at the top. That's actually how you grow a sport nationally, because people get attracted to names and faces that they've seen over and over. Same thing in golf. We get attracted to names that we've seen over and over throughout the different majors, and if we keep having basically one-hit wonders come in and win these, that isn't good.
Well, and Fish, you mentioned in the Open about how many of the guys with names, Johnson, Day, etc., Mickelson didn't play, obviously Woods didn't play, that the guys didn't even tee it up on Saturday and Sunday.
6 of the world's top 10 missed the cut.
That's not going to bring in the big casual audience.
Topic number 4.
How did an obscure rock band help the Redskins cause their keeping of their nickname?
Well, the Supreme Court ruled today that the Trademark and Patent Office can't block something because it's disparaging. There was a rock band that was denied a trademark in 2011 by the U.S. Patent Office because the group's name was much like the Redskins. It was a disparaging name to a group. Judge Alito, writing for the majority, says disparagement is subjective. Refusing trademark based on offense cuts directly against the First Amendment. Speech is not banned on ideas that offend. You could have put the name of the rock group and Redskins and switched it. Huge win for Daniel Snyder and the Redskins. The Redskins, I think, will be able to keep their trademark and the name will stay.
I think that's the biggest win that they'll have all season. They will not have a bigger win. They might not even win a game. Okay, they might win a game or two, but yeah, no victory probably is significant for Daniel Snyder than this one.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris on 93.1 The Ticket.
And we want to congratulate Chris Ingram, who was our Hawks winner. We will have 2 more chances next hour in this show, and then Caves and Prater will have a total of 6 chances, 2 an hour, to get a pair of tickets to tomorrow night's home opener. And again, tomorrow, 2:15, Joe Martirano is going to join us. We'll talk about his baseball career now that he's full-time baseball and how it's going.
Shade side too, right?
Yes.
Protection from that sun that's going to be beating down on what's supposed to be a hot week. Finally, you get the warmer weather coming in, which I'm excited about. But yeah, Joe Martorano doing this baseball thing full time. How much better is he at, you know, baseball picking one after we thought he picked football and wanted to go, you know, full speed ahead with that? So wonder if he has any regrets. I'm sure he'll say no, and he's full speed ahead, and we wish him the best. Hope it all works out for him.
And coming up at 2:15 today, we're going to talk with DJ Schramm, who was one of the three linebacker commits for Boise State. His family was out of town on family vacation. We tried to get him last week, wanted to be able to chat with us and talk to the folks in Boise, so we will visit with DJ Schramm coming up today at 2:15.
Indeed. So get a look at what was an exciting week last week for Boise State, adding in a couple of verbal commits, so we'll continue to follow up on that.
And then coming up next, we're going to talk about Phil Steele, who was a guest with Caves and Prater on Thursday. He says no Mountain West championship for Boise State. He also has no Mountain West team going to the New Year's Six Bowl. I think Phil may be a little out to lunch on that. I'm not willing to sell the Mountain West short. We'll see what Phil says. We'll see what I say. That's next when we come back on Sports Radio, The Ticket. I love buying all of the magazines that pick the college football standings for the coming year. I have Street and Smith. I've seen Phil Steele. There are others out there. Athlon usually does one. Lindy's does one. So there are plenty of magazines to look at to see where the picks are going to come from, Chris, and where they are.
Yeah, my question is, how much of a thicker pair of glasses do you need after you read all of these? Because the font in them are
I actually have a Sherlock Holmes magnifying glass.
Okay, that's what I'm saying, because you need a real big, thick magnifying glass if you want to read everything that's in these magazines.
Well, Phil Steele, who went on with Caves and Prater on Thursday, says that he's picking Boise State to come in second in the Mountain Division and has them going to the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. He has Colorado State winning the division. I think Colorado State's going to be better. Mike Bobo will be in his third season. I don't know if they're going to be good enough to be able to beat Boise State. I hadn't looked at them as a division winner, but they certainly have some talent. But the biggest thing looking at him, looking at Street and Smith, everybody is on that South Florida bandwagon with Charlie Strong thinking they are going to be the group of five team. Phil Steele has him at number 18, and why not? They've got 16 starters back, including quarterback Quentin Flowers, who was a very much of a dual threat, runner and passer. But here's my thing. When you have somebody like South Florida that is like supposed to be all that in a bag of chips, they have an extremely soft non-conference schedule. You lose one game and you're toast.
Are you really toast, though? Because you really think that every other team who wins a group of five conference will be flawless? Like, that's the thing. Like, you know, it isn't just who is the highest ranked team amongst the group of five. It's also you have to win the championship.
Correct.
Which, to think that all five, or at least there will be another one of the five that will be just completely flawless, hasn't lost, doesn't have a couple of losses on their mark, even if it's against some better teams, given where we think South Florida will be at the start of the rankings, they don't have to climb as high. Like, they don't have to start from a low place and climb up as much as a lot of these other teams will end up winning the group of five championships.
You can lose a game in the league if you come back and win the league and win the thing. But if you don't, if you lose a game in the league, that might prohibit you from even getting to the championship. Their four non-conference games are San Jose State, Stony Brook, UConn, and Illinois. Illinois the best in that group, would you think? Maybe?
Yeah, not strong.
Okay. Now, just so that we're not talking about Boise State, where people say, well, you're biased to Boise State. I'm going to go to Colorado State, okay? That's the guy that the team in our conference that Phil Steele is picking to do well. He has him at 43. He has San Diego State at 41. So either one, either division winner. San Diego State's non-conference includes at Arizona State and Stanford, and Colorado State includes Oregon State, Colorado, and Alabama. Seems to me a lot more opportunities for birdies in the Mountain West.
But you can also say a lot more games where you're going to be picked to lose, right? And now, are you going to get a demerit for losing those games against the power conference teams? Let's say, like, you mentioned Colorado State, and they had a couple of games that they could lose.
Colorado and Alabama. Oregon State's usually not bad.
So if they lose two of those games and South Florida loses one of those games, we're going to be comparing, okay, is your one loss against the team that you should have beaten is that significantly worse than two losses against teams that you probably weren't more talented than to begin with? And from what we've learned from the College Football Playoff Committee, I think they tend to reward you playing tougher teams even though you lose those games than just the loss total. Well, this team has one loss, this team has two losses, so we're going to put the team with one loss ahead of the team with two losses. That's one of the things that I've learned, at least, from the College Football Playoff the first couple years of this thing. Now, like the way you're talking about South Florida reminds me a lot about how the people talked about Houston going into last season, except Houston's schedule was going to test them. Like, Houston did not have layups like South Florida did, but a lot of people were projecting, well, look at the talent that they have, look at the coaching that's there, and look what they did at the end of last year and how that can translate to this year. And even though they could also lose a couple of their non-conference games and still be in a good position, they're not really saying that about USF, but it just goes to show you that the team that you talk about going into the season from the Group of Five standpoint, by no means is that going to be a contending team at the end, and by no means are they guaranteed to win the league. Like Houston, while they accomplished quite a bit early in the season, they had their slip-ups, and then they missed out on their chance to win the conference. So, yeah, it's early, and of course we all know that, but like I'm nowhere at the point where I'm willing to say it's South Florida's award to grab, and it's their inside track on the New Year's Six Bowl from the Group of Five.
The magazines I've seen, the Phil Steele and the Straight and Smith, concur on non-Mountain West, the other four Group of Fives, they concur on who's going to win the league. They agree.
Okay.
They had USF winning the American. They both have Appalachian State winning the Sun Belt. They both have Western Kentucky winning Conference USA. And they both have Toledo winning the MAC. Appalachian State, if you're looking at them, they've got 14 starters back from last year, including a starting quarterback. By the way, each of the four teams, non-Mountain West, that they project to win the league, all have returning starters at quarterback. Appalachian State opens at Georgia, a team that was hot and cold in the first year under Kirby Smart. And if they could get by Georgia, much like last year they played Tennessee, and I thought they were going to win that game, and they almost did. It went to overtime. Every other game the rest of the season, they probably will be favored at. Their other three non-conference games are FCS Savannah State, Wake Forest, and UMass. So App State, if somehow they get by Georgia, or even if they don't and it's close, and it's their one loss and Georgia ends up being good, very likely could put 11 wins on the board out of the Sun Belt.
And not only that, they have, not to say it's at the level of Boise State in the brand recognition, but I mean, Appalachian State did have that crazy upset over Michigan, at least to put, you know, people on their radar. So, you know, if they're a story, they will be built up to be that story because we are familiar with what they did in the past.
Western Kentucky and the Phil Steele, one to whatever, is listed at number 39. They also have a returning starter quarterback. Our friend Mike Sanford takes over for Jeff Brohm, who left to go to Purdue. Their non-conference teams in the Conference USA, Eastern Kentucky, Illinois, Ball State, and Vanderbilt.
Wins.
Or very likely wins if you want to consider yourself for that. And the MAC, Toledo is ranked number 40, returning starter at quarterback. Their non-conference, Elon, Nevada, Tulsa, and the Miami Hurricanes.
Against Nevada will be at least a conference opportunity, even though we don't think Nevada is going to be very good. It'd be nice if they're competitive in that game to kind of show that, hey, our team who's not very good in this league can hang with your, you know, team that we project to be the favorite in there. That would be one of the games to circle in the Mountain West non-conference for sure.
I think the biggest problem the Mountain West has this year, maybe last year to a certain extent, too much rock, scissors, paper. Boise State beats Colorado State. Maybe Colorado State beats San Diego State. I don't know if they play them.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe San Diego State beats Boise State. And then maybe the other team wins the conference playoff. If Colorado State and Boise State, whoever plays San Diego State, maybe you get a reversal on what happened during the regular season. I think having good teams but not a dominant team hurts you as far as getting a team to the New Year's Six.
Especially like the Mountain Division, we didn't anticipate that happening. We thought it'd be kind of Boise State with a significant step ahead of a lot of the other teams in that division, and it's just proven to not be the case over the last few years. So when you have that in mind and you take a look at that list, and again, the big point is They project every other conference champion in the group of five to be a higher ranked team than the Mountain West champion.
Mm-hmm.
To get to that point, was it 2-3 years after Boise State was the first of the group of five champions? And you kind of thought, well, this might be Boise State's, you know, to take for years. Like, that's a significant change to the point where it's almost like worth going into. Why did that happen so fast? So again, where every other group of five conference, they project their champion to be better than the Mountain West champion. That's crazy.
Here's your chance to win a pair of tickets to tomorrow night's home opener for the Boise Hawks. They're going to play Eugene. Get a free Smokey the Bear baseball as well. Be the ninth ticket caller right now at 424-9300. That's 424-9300. Stay listening for one more chance this hour, and then two more chances an hour on Caves and Prater until 6 o'clock. It's right here on Sports Radio, 93.1 FM, 1350 AM, The Ticket. Welcome back to Idaho Sports Talk. Bob and Chris here from 1 to 3. Caves and Prater will follow along from 3 to 6 to take you home. Congratulations go out to Tyson Wilson. He is a winner of our pair of tickets to tomorrow night's home opener for the Boise Hawks against Eugene. So congratulations to Tyson. We'll be giving away another pair this hour, and Caves and Prater will have six more to an hour to give away in the 3 to 6 show. Boise State last week, as you're listening here to Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris, had a big haul of commitments. Three linebackers, a quarterback, as well as either a receiver or a running back. Five guys coming in to commit to be in the 2018 class. And one of them is DJ Schramm, who is a linebacker from right outside of Fresno at Clovis West. DJ, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us.
Yeah, no problem. Excited to be on the show.
Well, we're excited to have you commit to Boise State. So the first question, why Boise State and why did you want to commit early?
Well, one thing my parents have always told me was there's no such thing as a perfect fit. You have to make it the perfect fit. And I think Boise State gives me the opportunity to do that.
Now, what were you looking for in a lot of these visits that you were taking, and what about Boise State was the most striking?
Just the way they treated me and my family when we came up. And they, like I said, they had everything I was looking for in a school, from the school to the from the academics to the athletics and recreational opportunities outside of school, because it's just, I love to fish, I love to be outside, and Boise's a great town for that.
DJ, your dad was an assistant coach for a while at Fresno State. Had you ever come to Boise to see a game when your dad was working against the Broncos?
I did. I came to the Mountain West Championship a couple years back when Fresno played at Boise.
So what did you take away that day watching the game in the stands, probably wearing red, and what was your opinion seeing it from behind the scenes as a recruit?
Well, that day wasn't a great one because, as you well know, Fresno State ended up losing, but I don't know, Boise just is always been a top choice of mine ever since I got that offer back in April, and I've always been super fired up about them, and I'm just super fired up to be a Bronco now.
Boise State football recruit DJ Schramm joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. And it was reported in the Idaho Statesman that Boise State was your first offer. What is so unique and special about the first offer? Because you hear that makes a difference for a lot of prospects is, well, they offered me first, and them offering it to me first meant a lot. So what did it mean to you?
Yeah, it's just all the hard work you put in from your whole life, all the hours in the weight room and on the field. It's just, when you get that first offer, it's something special because the first team that believes in you and believes in your ability, and it's like all that hard work's finally paying off.
Well, tell us a bit about yourself, linebacker, inside, outside, short side of the field, wide side of the field, what you think your strengths are. What will Boise State be getting in DJ Schramm?
I play inside, and my strengths are that I'm very physical and I'm very smart. I read offenses very well, and I get to the ball.
The physicality, we already mentioned the size, you know, over 215 pounds, you know, over 6 feet tall. What are some of the things that you did from training-wise to build up the strength like that?
I have a friend over at Illinois who helps me with my workouts, and he's done a great job of helping me to gain strength and help me with my speed on the field.
We're visiting with Boise State recruit DJ Schramm, who is a linebacker from Clovis West in Fresno. This will be the first year that players can sign in December at the end of the season, but not have to wait around through the bowl games and wait till early February. Is that something you're looking into doing, committing earlier than the regular February deadline?
It's definitely an option for me, but it's nothing I've really put too much thought into as of now.
What has your communication been with some of these other Boise State early commitments, including another linebacker, of course, the quarterback? What have been your communications with that group?
Yeah, I've definitely connected with them on Twitter and given them a follow, and we all have a group message, and they all seem like really great guys, and I look forward to working with them when we all get up there in either December or July next year.
Have you seen any highlights, any of the videos of any of the guys, especially the other linebackers that are coming to Boise State?
Yeah, I've checked them out, and I love the way they play and how they just attack offenses.
Now, you said that you enjoy fishing. Now, I'm somebody who's not from this area and had never really done the fishing thing until like a couple of weeks ago. So I was wondering if you had any like fishing advice for me, because you might be so much better at this than me. Do you have any advice to offer when it comes to fishing?
Yeah, patience is key. It's called fishing, not catching.
Is there any similarities between being a good fisherman and being a good linebacker?
Not that I can think of, because I love to be aggressive, and fishing's definitely a waiting game.
What's the best thing you've ever caught?
In Fresno, we mostly fish for bass, so I've caught 2-3-pound bass. Nothing too big.
Hmm. Well, you probably have some opportunity to get trout up here, so look forward to having you come, and appreciate your time, DJ, to join us to let people know who you are and who Boise State has in line to come for next season.
Thank you guys for having me.
All right, that is DJ Schramm, linebacker from just outside of Fresno, Clovis West. 2-3-pound bass, is that better than what you got over the weekend?
Yeah, I caught 11 fish, but they were like real like small perch. Like I caught 11, and I was like just beside myself.
But that was much better than the week before.
Yeah, the time before, it was just a nightmare. You go out there, again, DJ Schramm put it perfectly. It's called fishing, not catching. I learned all about that because, you know, you're out there for like a few hours. I'm like, man, I can't get anything, can't even get a bite. Like I want to feel that excitement that people have when they catch a fish. It's like the pride of it. And then you know, this weekend there was 11 perch. They were small. We just put them back in the water and mm-hmm. didn't eat them. But then one day I would like to do the process of catching the fish, cleaning the fish, cooking the fish, eating the fish. Like that would be the dream.
Are you sure you didn't catch the same fish 11 times?
See, that's what they were joking with me about. See, don't feel like one of them and keep saying that I was just catching the same fish over and over again. But like I was thinking that maybe this was the case, but there was the one time where we put the fish back in the water and apparently that was caught so deep in the mouth of the fish. Again, sorry for my terminology. I'm not like any expert at this. And when we put it back, it really didn't have much left. It was like basically floating at the top of the water upside down. So you knew it wasn't good news for the fish. Again, I'm sorry to the fish because I didn't really want to hurt you like that. But maybe I just took too long getting the hook out of the mouth and it just wasn't good news for the fish. So while I saw that fish floating on the water at one point, I got another fish. So I knew for at least a fact that there were at least two different fish that I caught because I could literally see one of them staying on top of the water while I was reeling in a different fish. So there you go, fish.
So you at least caught two.
I know
one
I caught at least
times
two.
And the other one once.
Yes. At least I know something. I got it right at least once.
I think much improved. Yeah. I mean, you either got at minimum two. When you had zero the time before, right? You went over Memorial Weekend, right? You had zero.
Yeah, but how dumb would the fish have to be to get caught 10 times? Like, let's be real here. Like, wouldn't the fish realize after the third time to just not get caught? Like, I know they might not have your fish, at least your namesake. Like, you would tell the fish to be smart enough to not get caught the same fish 10 times. I'm thinking I was catching a variety of them. It wasn't that difficult. I'm not
saying
I'm
skilled at all.
That's
what you're telling yourself, at least?
Yeah, I'm telling myself. I'm convincing myself. Because, again, next time, it's going to be a fish that I can actually eat and enjoy and cook and clean. And that'll be so fun. Mm-hmm. Jealous of all the people who
can. So that's the third time's going to be the charm.
Yes. Just waiting for it.
I want a big one so that fish and I can partake in some, too. This thing needs to be massive. Probably not going to find it where you're going, though.
True.
Right? Tune in to Idaho Sports Talk this Thursday from 3 until 6 for the 50-year radio celebration of Paul J. Schneider. Caves and Prater will be broadcasting from the Stone House at the Ram, interviewing Paul Jay's closest friends, reminiscing about his 50-year KBOI career, and speaking to the local broadcasting legend himself. So don't miss it. All starts Thursday at 3 o'clock. Fish, we got an update coming up. What's next?
We're talking about fish. Michael Phelps plans to race something similar to a fish, though, Chris, you may not want to catch what he's going to race against. Plus, Charleston River Dogs had a lot of fun at the expense of Tim Tebow. That's coming up next on the Sports Update on Idaho Sports Talk. And the Ticket Sports Update is sponsored by Lee Reed Jewelers, the diamond protection, a free nationwide warranty, and the personal face-to-face service of a local jeweler. One more reason why more Idahoans wear diamonds from Lee Reed than diamonds from any other jeweler. Lee Reed, Idaho's diamond jeweler. Thankfully, in Idaho, we have no great white sharks. But Michael Phelps plans to race one during Shark Week on the Discovery Channel. It'll be called Great Gold versus Great White, part of Shark Week, which begins July 23rd. And it's anyone's guess as how this is going to take place. I'm thinking maybe an Olympic-sized swimming pool, puts a bulletproof glass between them. But I have no idea other than the fact that Michael Phelps is going to race a great white shark.
I can't believe that he's actually going to be in the water with him with nothing around him or nothing separating him. I think that you could pretty much bet on that. Is that fair?
Unless they really want some interesting TV, they may have to cut off too soon, yeah.
Michael Phelps better be a really good swimmer if that's happening.
Imagine being so good at your sport that there's no more humans for you to race anymore. You have to start racing animals.
So like, shouldn't you say Bolt race a cheetah then?
Yeah, that's what's
Who won that race,
this?
By the way, between Chris Johnson and the cheetah?
I'm going to guess Chris Johnson didn't win. I would just have to guess. Now, my question to both of you, what will be closer? Michael Phelps versus the shark or Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor?
I think I guess my biggest question is how are they going to get the shark to go? I mean, I think maybe the shark would win easily, but the shark may not be motivated to go that quickly in the water.
Put some shark bait on the other side. It's like if you want your dog to run, put a piece of steak at the other side. They'll go and run and get it.
Well, I think McGregor will be closer.
Really?
Because I think McGregor has a chance to win. I don't think Michael Phelps has any chance. As long as it's a legitimate race and the shark doesn't stop, get distracted, jump over the glass and eat Michael Phelps. Anything that could happen, I think there's no way that Michael Phelps stands a chance.
You can give him a head start. Let's say if it's the shark has to do two laps and Phelps has to do one. But I don't know how the shark is going to do a lap.
How would it turn? Yeah, you know, it can't just turn around and push off like Michael Phelps can.
Push the end of the pool.
So I'm thinking this has to be a straight line race of some, you know, 500 meters.
Is this part of the Sharknado 5 that we were talking about earlier?
Different. That is a movie. That's
like
a movie.
Maybe it could be used for
Yes, yeah. I mean, the shark could be from Sharknado 5.
What would you pay for more on pay-per-view? You have one
this
option.
This was pay-per-view?
Yeah, if this was pay-per-view,
I'm assuming
you pay
that
more?
Means I don't get the undercards for McGregor.
No, just the Mayweather-McGregor fight or the Phelps versus the Shark.
Mayweather, that'll be much longer. This will be 2 minutes at best.
This will be like the Kentucky Derby, probably even shorter as far as time.
Well, the Mayweather
Is he in the same pot? Is he in the same pool?
No one knows.
If he is, I think maybe I'd pay for that. But
no one said anything besides Michael Phelps saying, I'm going to raise a shark.
Mayweather Pacquiao was long, but it wasn't fun. Like, no. It doesn't, the length of whatever you're watching doesn't matter.
But I have a chance to watch. If he beats a shark, we'll forget about it in a month. If McGregor beats Mayweather, we will never forget ever.
It'll be Buster Douglas all over again, I think.
Yeah, I would probably pick the fight because I think more people will talk about it. But
yeah, and I think this thing's going to be some sort of a gimmick in the end. Has to be.
Well, speaking of gimmicks, Bob, there's a great gimmick over in the southeastern United States. That would be Tim Tebow. They were playing the Charleston River Dogs, and they had a lot of fun at the expense of Tim Tebow. The River Dogs mascot came out with some eye black on that said John 3:16. Of course, a shot at Tebow and his eye black during college. And on the video board, every single Firefly's player for the team that Tebow plays for that was not Tim Tebow was introduced as not Tim Tebow with their picture, and then in the background, the crying Tebow picture face from when he lost to Alabama in the 2009 SEC Championship game.
Nice.
And Tebow also launched his bat about 500 feet in the air.
Wow. Why?
Slipped out of his hands.
Oh, he was trying to save somebody. Giving him the bat.
I don't know where the bat on. I don't think he was close to saving somebody, but yeah, bat slipped out of his hand on the strikeout. Probably went about 50 feet in the air and it looked like it hit the upper deck behind home plate.
If they really wanted to troll Tim Tebow's team, they should have just shown clips from his tenure with the all teams that weren't Broncos.
That's the Jets, yeah.
Or the Jets.
The Patriots?
Yeah. Just show preseason footage of the Patriots. Really show a lot of the passes he made with the Broncos because they weren't good. Like, there's a lot to choose from.
Yeah, but Tebow always knows he wants a playoff game as the Broncos, so.
I wonder if they have nice video screens at these ballparks to be able to show the interceptions in high definition.
I still marvel that he's with the same team. I would have thought they would have moved him around a little bit in the organization and maybe see.
It's on a 5-game hitting streak, so it could be any day now.
Yeah, he's. If you're not. How old is he? 27?
I think he's older than that. 29.
29. Yeah. If you're not moving up at a faster pace, you're in trouble.
Well, speaking of being in trouble, that's what UCF kicker Donald De La Haye thought he was. When UCF compliance called him in and said the fact that he was now able to qualify for advertisements on his YouTube videos might put him in jeopardy for keeping a scholarship. Well, De La Haye announced in a video on his channel yesterday that he's going to continue making videos. He said, quote, "The decision is in the NCAA's hand whether or not they want to suspend me or whether they want to let me do what I'm doing." And he added, "I'm going to upload regularly to this channel. I'm not stopping. I'm not demonetizing. I refuse to. So it's out of my hands now."
I like this guy. He's bold. He might be a little silly because UCF might be the one to suspend him, right? Like, if you are knowingly using an eligible player, isn't that a reflection back on
they
the
might
team?
Have to, yeah.
And if they know he's doing this and doing this would cause him a loss of eligibility, UCF gets in trouble for playing him. So it might not be in the NCAA's hands. It might be UCF that says we're not going to play you anymore.
And on Wednesday at 2:15, we're going to visit with the Gonzalez twins from UNLV. They gave up their last year of women's basketball basically on a similar kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And we could probably ask them if they ever thought of just basically saying, I'm doing it. And, you know, maybe it was UNLV that told them they needed to make a choice.
Yeah, doing it anyway, making money. For them, it's making money, modeling and being in commercials and singing. The Gonzalez twins originally from Pocatello, Idaho. For Donald De La Haye, it's all about making money on YouTube videos.
By the way, I saw the Gonzalez twins in a commercial for eBay. You said you saw another one where they actually speak, because the one I saw, there were a lot of different people in the commercial. They didn't say anything.
Yeah, they have a speaking one, so whoever is managing them, they have at least a couple of gigs. So we'll see if their names continue to be names that are at least on the young people's radar for a while. And they were, what, over a million followers on Instagram, so they have that profile.
I think my favorite part is if UCF wouldn't have said anything, I bet you no one would have known about this. Now that UCF said something, that might be the reason he gets shut down, and maybe he yells after UCF. But we'll go to breaking.
But if you're UCF, though, you have to if you know it. You don't want to take a chance on having something like Louisville come down the pike.
The whole thing comes down on how ads work. From what I've seen, once you hit 10,000 subscribers, you qualify for ads. But the companies don't necessarily say, oh, well, I want this guy to be my advertisement. They're just kind of randomly picked, so that wouldn't be anything about his likeness. So it depends on YouTube. And here we go, breaking news. Kevin Durant is going to decline his player option for next year, meaning he will become a free agent July 1st, and he's going to re-sign with the Warriors. I hate to break it to everyone, but he's going to decline his $28 million player option, hit free agency, and then take less money to allow the Warriors to re-sign Andre Iguodala. So for a brief moment, we were all excited. So then Kevin Durant killed
him. I am Durant's agent, let's say. Yep. Why would you want to do that? Take less money.
So that he can win more championships.
Yeah, he will take a little bit less. He said he'll leave some on the table so they can re-sign Iguodala and bring back Sean Livingston, although eventually he's going to get his. Steph Curry, it's his time to get his because he's been playing at a discount of $12 million. When Mike Conley's making like $40 million this season, I don't think Mike Conley is more than three times the player.
I was
going to
say, forget money. Would anybody consider the trade of Mike Conley for Steph Curry, and how much would you have to add?
Yeah, you'd have to. There's nothing that you can't add to make those two sides, even when Mike Conley's making that much money and Steph Curry isn't. Now, if you're the rest of the NBA, do you hope, like, in the time between now and when Kevin Durant resigns, like Joe Lacob does something like Donald Sterling-ish and says something very racist that comes out on Instagram or something like that? So that way, hey, Kevin Durant's kind of upset with him and he doesn't want to play with Joe Lacob anymore, so he goes to a different team. I feel like that's the only way that he's not
like
a member of the
Warriors.
Warriors'
new and old stadium both just sink into the ocean.
Yeah, that's the new stadium. You probably don't want. You got to be on his best behavior. Don't want to upset the people when you have all this at stake.
No. No, you don't. And we'll end the sports update with saying Tom Brady, he hopes the NFL could go overseas. This time he's not going east, he's going west because Patriots quarterback is visiting China for the first time as part of a promotion with Under Armour, and he said that he wants to play a game in China, and he hopes that happens. Now, it did almost happen 10 years ago. The Seahawks and Patriots were scheduled to play a preseason game in China. However, the NFL canceled that game to focus on the debut of the NFL in London, which started later that regular season. So here you go. Tom Brady's hoping we go to China now for the NFL. No word on how thrilled he is to play the Raiders in Mexico this season.
I know untapped markets are untapped markets, but NFL's insistent on this international thing that we love football. We accept it. I don't know if the rest of the world is necessarily rocking with our love of football or what we call football.
Here's your chance to win a pair of tickets on the third baseline for tomorrow's Boise Hawks 2017 home opener against Eugene. You also get a free Smokey the Bear baseball as well. Be the ninth ticket caller right now at 424-9300. That's 424-9300. Stay listening for more chances with Caves and Prater. Again, this is our last chance on our show. Give us a call here at Sports Radio 93.1 FM, 1350 AM, The Ticket.
It's time to consult the Magic 8-Ball. Open up a fortune cookie, or maybe even flip a coin.
I step him into the future.
However they do it, it's time for some quick picks and predictions with Bob and Chris.
And it's sponsored by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and accessories located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City. You guys are tied over the weekend. Both went 2-1. You both had the Nationals winning Friday. Bob on that Marlins bandwagon said the Marlins would win the most games, and they did by one.
They only won one.
The Giants and Phillies both got swept. The Marlins blew two games in the ninth. I'm still upset about it. And Chris wasn't a believer in Brooks Koepka, but he was a believer in an American winning the U.S. Open, and he was correct. So you guys are both 2-1. We'll let Chris go first since he did win the last week. Chris, we'll start with Clayton Kershaw on the mound trying to become the first pitcher in the NL to get to 10 wins, taking on the Mets. He has not lost a decision since May 1st. But the Giants somehow, I don't know how they beat him. So, Chris Lewis, will Clayton Kershaw get his 10th win tonight versus the Mets?
Isn't that the story of Clayton Kershaw's career? Does all this, he's pitching well, ERA at this, whip at this, but somehow the Giants beat him. Like, I feel like that's been the story of his life. But, yes, invoke the role of Clayton Kershaw. When he's on the board, I'll pick the Dodgers and I'll pick him to get a win every single time. The odds are in my favor. You mentioned his record, excellent. He's been about as unsolvable as usual, save for the one game against the Cubs where he got hit, but, you know, the team still won the game. So, yes, I'm going Clayton Kershaw.
Bob?
I've seen Clayton Kershaw win a lot of games. The Mets are a team that are not very good this year. I can't go against Clayton Kershaw. I think I may have gone against, may have even gone with him in that game against the Giants, thinking he'd beat them, but they didn't. But he's the best pitcher in baseball right now, certainly in the regular season. And I don't think the Mets have anything to knock him around.
Now we'll go to the College World Series, perhaps the two best teams left. You got number one Oregon State taking on number four LSU in the winner's bracket A side. Oregon State's won 22 games in a row. LSU's won 17 games in a row, so clearly these teams don't know what losing tastes like. So, Bob, who you got winning tonight in the winner's bracket A side, LSU or Oregon State?
I've got LSU winning the game. I don't know that it makes that much difference. They're both really, really good. I just have seen LSU do things at the College World Series. They always seem to find ways to get it done. I'm going to take LSU against Oregon State tonight.
Chris?
Extra innings and LSU wins. Going LSU, mainly because of what Bob said. Like, LSU on this stage is, when they've been a worse seed than a lot of the teams that they're facing, they find ways to get a little bit deeper. Now, Oregon State's also, you know, recently champions, so Oregon State's very good as well. But we're picking between good teams. I'll pick LSU. Plus, they do have the advantage in extra innings of being the technical home team in the game.
And by the way, Friday was National Mascot Day. I don't know, did you hear about that?
I did not.
That's true. It was National Mascot Day. If we're talking about mascots, give me Mike the Tiger over Benny the Beaver any day of the week.
Okay, there you go. Analysis. Hashtag analysis. Mascots.
And the loser of that game would play the winner of Florida State, Cal State Fullerton, going on right now. Florida State's got a 6-4 lead, bottom of the seventh.
And Chris, you don't like the hairstyles of Cal State Fullerton.
Yeah, we got a little bit of time. What's up with Cal State Fullerton needs more people? Because they got apparently too many of the same type of people if everybody is going with this trend of if you can grow a mustache, which not everybody can do in college,
there's some pretty interesting mustaches on that team.
They have to grow it out, and it has to look like Raleigh Fingers. It's all like shined and curled. Oh my goodness! It's just like, what are you doing? I know this is the playoff beard, and that's one thing, but now you're just going with the mustache to look like. I don't know what the goal is with this.
I mean, hey, if you're in the final eight of the College World Series, I don't think they're getting the right kind of people, right, Chris? They're getting their winners. Yeah. They're getting winners.
You still got to look fly. I don't care. You're on national
television. What about the blonde spray
now
paint
we
on the hair?
Get to the blonde spray paint on the hair. And I don't know if this is an Odell Beckham thing, but he's not the first to certainly bleach their hair or have a gold. But, you know, Odell Beckham with the gold hair, and then you see all the young black people with the, you know, the frohawk and the gold, and I'm like, yeah, come on. We can't let this become, like, the trend of the gold. I see, like, six-year-olds with the frohawk and the gold in it. I'm like, come on, man. Odell Beckham, that kind of an impact on the culture. Now, these guys have more of the traditional lack of, say, non-nappy black people-looking hair. It's more of the free-flowing type hair, and they got the gold in it, and it's down the middle. It's different.
They're getting winners. They're recruiting winners. That's all I got for you, Chris.
It is different.
Well, let's go to different. That would be the Padres somehow sweeping the Cubs with what they did last time. They sent the Cubs 25-27, the worst record the Cubs have had all year. They're back in action this time in Wrigley. Chris Lewis, who you got winning tonight, Padres or the Cubs?
I'm going with the Cubs, mainly because I've seen how bad the Padres have been. Like, if you're somehow worse than the Phillies, I can only imagine how bad you are. Like, that's how bad it is as a Phillies fan, that if I see a team that's worse than you, I'm like, my God,
Bob,
you must be awful.
Do theory. I mean, the Cubs won 0-3 in San Diego a couple of weeks ago. John Lester pitching for the Cubs tonight. The Cubs, thank goodness for them, they're in a mediocre division in the NL Central. They're ready to make their move. Cubs are going to sweep this series from the Padres.
Sweep.
That's all we got. You guys are tied at 2-1. You missed any of the picks, check them out on the KTIK Twitter page.
Biggest news of the day, Chris, the news that you were so excited for on Friday with the possibility that the Sixers would be choosing one. It's going to like be like Christmas Day coming on Thursday.
Yeah, that'll be fun. We got the draft on Thursday. Throughout this week, we'll have different angles of the draft, not just from a Sixers standpoint, because I realize I'm one of the few people from here who are, you know, have that East Coast tie, but more the national appeal of it, how the draft can affect LeBron James and what his future will be, and Paul George, and could we have a new super team come about? So there's more angles than just who the prospects that are involved, and that joins, you know, later on this week. You mentioned the Gonzalez twins. We'll have them on Wednesday. We'll be interested to kind of hear what dilemma they face between coming back for what would be their last year of eligibility at UNLV, which would have been a very good basketball team in the Mountain West women's hoop side, or stepping away and starting their professional career. So I'm looking forward to that again at Wednesday at 2:15.
Jeff Cave's back in studio. Jeff, after we hopefully didn't run your show into the ground from 3 until 6 on Friday, good to see you back, and glad you're taking over today at 3.
Well, Bob, I hope you didn't run the show into the ground as well. That's quite a toss. Now, what were you two people talking about? Baseball? That would do it.
Yeah, we're talking about tennis. We're talking a lot of tennis. Analysis about the French Open is where we went.
Well, it'd be a week late. That would really hurt.
Hey, we did it.
That would be more tennis than I even said.
So what do you guys have today on your show?
Well, thankfully, we have Darren College in here. And, you know, we're going to talk some about this MMA and boxing analysis with the Idaho Boxing Commissioner, the MMA fighter that was boxing that died, and what it takes to be a boxer when you were an MMA fighter because of the McGregor-Mayweather angle is pretty timely. So we're going to talk to him about that. Plus, there's a lot of issues in and around what's going on with pro sports right now. Really interesting on how Butch Harmon described Ricky Fowler. Are you trying to be a Kardashian, or are you trying to win golf tournaments? And his preoccupation with social media, and Darren knows him. So we'll get some perspective on Fowler, who I thought was the one ray of sunshine this weekend, other than the fish over there rooting for Koepka, can whatever girlfriend he drug up to the award ceremony. Everybody else, I think, was looking for name brands so they could identify with him. So we'll spend some time with that as well. So we'll have a college experience today.
Looking forward to it. Darren College coming in, and he's certainly going to have a take on all of those things. I think the MMA thing with the when you look down the line, Mayweather-McGregor and what happened, how different is the sport? I mean, do you open yourself up to maybe some real harm if you don't really understand how to box that well.
I would yes. Yeah, the answer would be yes.
If you're stepping into a ring with Floyd Mayweather and you don't know how to box, I don't think that's going to help you out very much. That's going to be a challenge.
I would think that's going to be an issue if McGregor is not ready to – if he's not ready to go 12 rounds, which Mayweather likes to push guys to the limit. He's a defensive boxer, and he's in the best shape of anybody usually. I'll be surprised if he goes that long, if McGregor can make it that long. I would try to end it earlier and take some haymakers, and he's getting paid one way or the other, so I don't think it'll be that many tears shed.
All right, Caves, we will be looking forward to you and Prater. I think we talked quite a bit about that on Friday when the, you know, pretty much last week was when that fight was announced. I agree. I don't think McGregor is going to have a shot to beat him on points. I think he's going to have to knock him out if he wants to win.
Yeah, but that shark might get upset. I'm still thinking that Michael Phelps maybe can be upset a shark a little bit better than McGregor can up and Mayweather. But on the point about, you know, the golfing, you got seven straight single, you know, first-time major winners. I want a Kardashian in golf. I want somebody who can have the celebrity but handle it. That would be the best of both worlds. Like, we're trying to make Ricky Fowler pick between being a celebrity and being a golfer. Why can't he be both?
Joe Martirano tomorrow at 2:15 playing for the Eugene Emeralds. Bob and Chris back tomorrow at 1. Caves in College up next on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket. The mothership has landed on mornings from 7 to 10 AM.
Monday night is the fourth best game of the weekend. But sometimes it's the 6th or the 7th or the 9th or the 10th. I mean, sometimes it's not even in the sphere of the best game of the weekend. And here's why we all love the Hank Williams Jr. song. Because that's when the Monday night game was the best game of the weekend.
Listen to the DA Show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 on Sports Radio 93.1 FM, The Ticket.
Guys don't really talk about antiperspirant. Despite that, 91% of Dove Men Plus Care users recommend it. Here's what they said.
It blocks the, perspiration, I think is the fancy word.
It's comfortable. It smells nice. My girl likes the smell.
Well, it's hard.
I think it's quite masculine.
My underarms aren't the worst thing at the gym.
It's kind of like the Hoover Dam for my armpits, I guess.
Dove Men Plus Care Antiperspirant. Tough on sweat, not on skin.
At Lowe's, we know that pros need to be ready. Ready to roll felt, ready to cap, ready to shingle. And during Lowe's Ready to Raise the Roof event, pro customers should get ready to save big with up to 20% on Owens Corning shingles every day when they buy in bulk. Plus, now through July 16th at Lowe's, pros can save up to 20% off select Hitachi nailers, compressors, and power tools. See the Pro Desk in store for details. Shingle offer applies to contractor packs. Selection varies by store, U.S. only.
Your mission? Join thousands of screaming Bronco football fans at Albertson Stadium by purchasing your season tickets. Spotlight, South End Zone, Family Ticket Plan, Derek Castle.
We've been season ticket holders since the 90s. You know, it's fun being there as a family. It's, you know, I tell people all the time, this is how our family gets together. This is how we spend time, is spending a whole Saturday or Friday or Thursday, whatever it should be, tailgating. And then we walk the stadium together. We sit together. And you know, it's just a whole family affair for us.
Boise State football. Make it your family tradition.
You know, they've learned that we connect as a family through Boise State. We got to buy new gear every year for the new season, for the kids, for the wife, for myself. They've been wearing Boise State football uniforms and cheerleader outfits since they were infants, and I don't think they could imagine not going to a game when there's a home game.
Season ticket plans are as low as $165 per seat. Call 426-4737.
Sports is just part of our family, and it's how we connect and how we get together and how we enjoy life. I can't imagine not going to Boise State games.
Summertime in Idaho can really be a pest. Jeff Kay is for Alpha Home Pest Control. Look, I love the outdoors as much as most guys, but one thing I don't like is when the outdoors comes inside or where I'm relaxing. That's why I trust Alpha Home Pest Control to rid my living areas of wasps, spiders, ants, flies, mosquitoes. Who wants to be bugged in their home? And with the kind of snowfall and rain we've had this year, bugs, rodents, and pests are going to want to party in my house. So don't waste money trying to do it yourself. Go to alphahomepestcontrol.com. Use the $50 off code on your first pest service. Call 475-4440. Hey, they know how to protect your home from pests and rodents and avoid the chemicals that can be hazardous to your family and pets. Call 475-4440. Get rid of the pests in your home or business with a maintenance program or one-time application. It's your call. Guaranteed solutions, or they come back for free to get it right. Alpha Home Pest Control. Let those bugs and pests party outside your space, not in it. Call 475-4440.
Picture this. It's Monday afternoon and you're at Domino's buying a large three-topping pizza. You give the Domino's employee $7.99 plus tax, of course. Now, picture this. It's Friday and you're at Domino's buying a large three-topping pizza. You give the Domino's employee more than you paid Monday. You feel bamboozled. But then, you hear this.
Domino's is now extending its $7.99 large three-topping carryout deal to all day, every day.
And so you danced and ate Domino's. Carryout only. Must ask for this limited time offer. Prices, participation, and charges may vary.
From the Data Tell Studio, 48,000 watts of sports talk. Sports Radio 93.1 FM.